You are listening to the Cycling Podcast Femina, proudly supported by Lacca. Whether you're lining up for a Gran Fondo in the Alps, chasing the cobbled classics in Belgium, or heading on a dream cycling trip abroad, the last thing you want to worry about is what happens if something goes wrong. Every ride comes with its risks, whether it's a stolen bike, a crash, or a broken derailleur at the worst possible moment. That's why Lacca Bicycle Insurance exists. Because when things go wrong, Lacca has your back. So let's talk about what really makes Lacca's bicycle insurance tick. It's their customer service. Claims are handled by Lacca's in-house team of experts with no depreciation or excess on bike claims. The team at Lacca has your back when you need them most. They've even been crowned the best bike insurance provider at the Insurance Choice Awards for 7 years running. And it's no surprise when you check their ratings. They have 4.9 stars on Google, 4.6 stars on Trustpilot, and over 2,300 five-star reviews on Smart Money People. But don't just take Lacca's word for it. Check out this testimonial from Rehan on Trustpilot, who raves about their top-notch customer service.
Love you, Lacca. Sasha was friendly, helpful, kind, and great to deal with. The first thing I was asked was whether I was hurt, and if so, was I okay? I really appreciated this and felt human rather than just a customer. My claim was easy to deal with, and the service was tip-top. Best bike insurance out there. Thank you, Lacca, Sasha, and team.
So, if you want specialist bike insurance that truly goes the extra mile, head over to lacca.co and see why more and more cyclists are choosing Lacca. Sign up today and experience the best customer service in the game. Lacca alive in the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, France, Belgium and Germany. So the Cycling Podcast listeners in these regions get their first 30 days free, which includes travel cover when they sign up with the code TCP30 at lacca.co/TCP. That code is TCP30 at lacca.co/TCP. Terms and conditions apply. You know what to do.
You're listening to the Cycling Podcast Femina.
Well, hello and welcome to this April episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina. And my name is Rose Manley. And, well, Denny Gray, we couldn't be somewhere more atmospheric, could we, right now?
No, we're in a proper little French bar to back, right near Mons-en-Pavel, as the men's race is underway. It's a great little atmosphere here, isn't it? I feel like I'm in that documentary, the Hell of the North documentary, where, you know, got a lot of French people gathered around a TV chatting about the race, kind of getting excited. It's a bit of a kind of festival type atmosphere here. Over the road, there's another bar, music pumping, a much younger crowd.
That was our original bar we were going to go to, and then realised that there's no way we were going to be able to record anything in
No. But it feels like the atmosphere is building, doesn't it, for the race that's about to come through here in a couple of hours.
Yes, the men's Paris-Roubaix, but we're not here to talk about that, are
no.
we? It is a great little spot that we found. You know, the memorabilia is on the wall and the flags are on the wall, and there's beers and wines, and everyone's getting their drinks and the buffet's being pulled out. And of course, wherever there is wine, there is Rebecca Charlton. So we've got Rebecca, we're talking to Rebecca Charlton down the line. Rebecca, I imagine, well, actually, I know you were busy yesterday, but I'm sure you caught up on Paris-Roubaix.
I did. I'm just getting such massive FOMO over here, because you're sat in an atmospheric little bar cafe with your fresh beer, and I am in my little box office at home, and that's box-sized office, not an actual box office. And I've basically found the dregs of a Belgian beer that my other half had yesterday and just left the sort of stale glass in here. So that's the comparison of where I'm at. I should have definitely bought myself a fresh alcoholic drink for the occasion. But missing out over here.
Well, we do know, you were telling us earlier, Becca, about, you know, how much your other half knows about cycling. You know, we could have had his input along with his Belgian beer this morning, couldn't we?
I think, yeah, I mean, I could easily switch seats with him after his insights yesterday. So I had a lovely afternoon with Dame Laura Kenny opening a brand new Sigma Sports store. So we were having a really lovely chat about her career and what she's doing now and loads of brilliant insight into that. But we had the big screen on as well, of course, with Paris-Roubaix Femmes, Avec Zwift happening at the same time. So we kind of had half an eye on that and then watched the end of the race. And then, of course, I've gone back and analysed what happened before that final. But yeah, I must admit, both of us were quite eager to get to the screen as well. Oh, and Paul's insight, which is where I was going with this. And I can tell it's been a hectic 24 hours. Definitely haven't even had any beer. But yeah, so we were on Instagram on the train on the way home, just absorbing the posts about what happened in the race. And he said, oh, the woman that won's got a muddy knee. So I think she probably did come back from a crash to get that. And then he said... And he's only recently started following the sport because of me. He said, oh, is she wearing yellow kit because she won the Tour de France?
Look at us. Look at us cycling connoisseurs laughing at these at his lack of knowledge. But it was, you know, it was a fantastic day. But I mean, he might be right. You know, Paul might be very soon correct, mightn't he, about the Tour de France prediction. Maybe that was more of his prediction about his prophecy that Pauline Ferrand-Prévot would be in the yellow jersey. We know that is what she's keen to do. But
I think she's he's trying to take Denny's crystal ball baton.
Yes, he's trying to grab Denny's crystal balls and not let go. That's exactly what is happening. Well, I should actually explain, you know, we don't need a crystal ball to tell you what's going to come on in the show today. And we are going to be looking over at the classics that we've had so far this season. Who are the big winners? Who are the big losers? I'm not sure that we have all the answers, actually. It's been such a strange season so far, hasn't it? But then we also have a mini feature, which is from me and Denny. We were out, as you can understand, out at Paris-Roubaix for the women's race. We were kind of hitting the cobbles, trying to get from cobble to cobble and get to the start, get round the start, get into the velodrome and talk to some of the riders at the finish. So a mini feature following us through our day there. But, well, yeah, we obviously had the Arrivé episodes, haven't we? Me and you, Denny, did Paris-Roubaix, and me and you, Becca, did the one on Tour of Flanders, and we had one with Joe from Milan San Remo. So kind of got all of those races in detail covered. But, you know, what can we say about who has done well and who has done badly, Denny, overall? Which teams have kind of flourished? It's been a really up and down one, really.
It has been. And I think, as ever, although there's been a huge change in team leadership, the strength of different teams, as ever, our kind of baseline has been the performances of SD Works. I think we're still looking to SD Works to be the dominant team. And yesterday, I think after Paris-Roubaix, I think Rose and I were talking about the classic season, weren't we? And I think we felt maybe SD Works had a disappointing season. But then I was looking back at the 8 World Tour one-day races we've had since the UAE Tour, and actually, they won 4 of the 8 races. They were on the podium, I think, for all of them, bar Omloop. So they've had a very strong classic season, despite the fact that they are relying on mainly 2 riders now, Lorena Wiebes and Lotte Kopecky. I think Lotte Kopecky was such a big favourite yesterday. It was almost a surprise that she didn't win. I would say SD Works have had a solid classic season, actually, which I know perhaps some people would disagree with, but I think 3 victories for Wiebes, Kopecky winning Flanders, you know, a massive win for the world champion in Belgium. I think they can be pretty satisfied with their season so far.
Yeah, I definitely think that, yeah, you're right. I mean, they can be satisfied. It's almost like, it's funny, isn't it? Because all these races are kind of grouped together as World Tour races, but that doesn't mean that they all sit in either the minds of the fans or in the minds of the riders as being the same kind of level of race that you want to win. I mean, yes. I think that it's quite clear that Paris-Roubaix and Tour of Flanders are definitely a step above the likes of, definitely above Gent-Wevelgem and Depana So, and obviously, yet for SD Works to have one tour of Flanders with Lotta Kopecky, but to, I don't, it's strange, isn't it? I mean, with a team like SD Works, if they miss out on such a big goal as Paris-Roubaix, and they miss out of it, even though they seem to have what who should be the best riders in the race, it kind of seems like a failure for them. But that's probably us just judging them more harshly than we would judge everyone else, isn't it?
It is definitely us doing that, but equally just seeing their responses, the responses of Kopecky and Rivas after the race yesterday, they're massively disappointed in themselves. And I think when they project that expectation on themselves as individuals, as teammates, we're going to pick up on that vibe as well. And so I think all round, everyone's hugely critical. But yeah, I mean, it hasn't gone entirely their way. But as you say, Denny, I mean, it's not been unsuccessful, has it? And you look at the number of victories Vives took back to back to back, taking her 100th victory as well. And I think when I kind of went back through the coverage yesterday, catching up later in the day, it did look like they had that perfect setup, didn't it? They had Kopecky in the group with Rebers, and it was kind of theirs to lose. But then I think it is testament to how strong Lotta Kopecky is, and again, what we expect from her, to see her do that work, that pulling, that chasing, that massive drives on the front again, again, again. And actually, we still expected her to be there and to do more at the end. But actually, if it was any other team, any other rider, you'd say, right, job done. She's going to pull off now because she's essentially done all that work for Vives. But we expect them both to be ever present, to be there, to do the work, then to finish it off. So I think they were obviously massively disappointed. But I mean, we'll get into this, but it just shows what we're playing with this season. We had expectations of the team transfers making a big shake-up and riders coming back into the peloton making a big shake-up. And that's essentially made it so exciting. I just think it has been, although as we've nodded to, SD Works have taken a lot of victories, but it hasn't been this foregone conclusion, I think, in the last couple of races. And it's brought such a different dynamic in. And yeah, we've got plenty more riders to be talking about as well.
Yeah, I think that actually is a great point, Becca, that I think in a way it's kind of, it's almost like SD Works have been very successful, like they have got the wins, but they haven't been able to play the games that they normally like to play. They haven't managed to play the races how they usually like to play, which is really dominating everything, crushing every kind of attack that goes. It's almost like they kind of won on the strength of the solo performances of the likes of Lorena Vives being just extremely powerful. You really, if she's, you know, she's great on the climbs and she's great and she's like the best on at a sprint at the end of that. So I feel like, and same with Lotta Kopecky, really. I mean, that it's almost like their wins have come on fantastic solo performances, but I don't feel like as a team they've actually kind of got it right. But obviously they've still come away with loads of success. I realise that when I'm saying this, I'm trying to draw on any criticism I can find of them. But
their wins have been, I guess, a bit anticlimactic, haven't they?
Yeah,
I
mean, yes.
Kopecky winning was the fact that she was clearly perhaps the strongest rider on the day, but equally it felt like there weren't enough riders really taking it to her in Flanders. It was definitely a race out the back. There was that kind of Nivea Doma attack later on, wasn't there, where she cramped up and final kilometres. But other than that, we didn't really see a lot of riders seeming to take it to SD Works. And equally with Vibus's wins, I mean, Longo Borghini tried her best in Milan-San Remo, didn't she? But she was denied. And it was almost like, well, if you can't outthink us, if you can't outride us, then we will mop up those races. You know, Rebus and Kopecky are just, they will be there.
Yeah.
And any kind of hesitancy, any kind of lack of imagination from their rivals mean that they will win. That's not to say that, you know, they won because of that, but that's the way it felt in these wins, didn't it? It didn't really, as you say, Rose, it wasn't like, it wasn't quite the dominance. Rebus's wins are never that like that anyway, because she always wins at the last minute.
Yeah,
she's a sprinter, right? But they definitely didn't have that air of dominance that they've had before. But they did, you know. Blanca Vas came second in Binder, Van der Breggen was second in Strada Bianchi. Now there are some signs that there are other riders in that team that will have the, clearly they've got some very, very strong riders, and they will, I think, we'll see them shine a lot more later on in the season as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also one of the interesting things about this season, is it does seem that the teams are kind of specialising to some extent. I mean, we're not seeing, in years gone past, we've just seen the same riders racing every cobbled classic, you know, most of the Ardennes, and then also doing all of the stage races. And we're not seeing that here. I mean, crucially, kind of Demi Vollering hasn't been present at these cobbled classics. Obviously, she was there for Milan San Remo. You know, Elisa Longo Borghini obviously has crashed out and then, you know, hasn't been able to participate in Paris-Roubaix. But we're kind of seeing a little bit more. Kashini Vidoma, say, she wasn't at Paris-Roubaix. And, I think that in past years, it's kind of like all the riders, all the top hitters do all of the races. And I think that's kind of one of the marked changes that we've seen this season.
Definitely. And that conversation is happily evolving, isn't it? There's so much more nuance to the season now. And I know we come into every season saying this, but I genuinely think this season has been next level in terms of talking points. It's been unpredictable to a certain extent. And I think you're absolutely right. It's a narrative that, as I say, is changing. And it's really good. It's really good for the sport, because in the past, I think for me as a commentator as well, you want to keep that energy up, but equally you're kind of thinking in years past, going a few years back in the calendar now, well, that rider's the strongest, so they're probably going to take it no matter what the terrain, no matter what's thrown at them. But now I don't think you can say that. I think it is nuanced. I think it is people specialising, and people aren't fielding every single race as well. We've seen riders like Vollering go up to altitude. We saw Kopecky start a little bit later because she was at altitude. And I think this is a fantastic thing for the sport, really, and it's just further and further evolving it. But I think also, not that this is a nice thing, but I think it hasn't been easy to predict in terms of, like, Kopecky. She's shown that she's human ultimately at the start of this season. She had good days, she had bad days. She turned things around for Flanders after saying that she was really disappointed with how her legs felt, how she was going a couple of days before. So she's not come into every race with us saying, yeah, she's sort of firing on all cylinders. She's had ups and downs. So I think the dynamic's been really fascinating as well. But I have to say, Rose, and give you the credit here, when we last caught up on the Flanders Arrivé, you said that it was only a matter of time for Pauline Ferrand-Prévot. And bingo, you were correct.
Yes.
It wasn't long. We'd have to wait long, did we?
Yeah. I think when I said, oh, it won't be long, I was then like, oh, maybe it will be a little bit of a time. Oh, I don't know. But yes, I should have backed myself there because, phenomenal win for her, wasn't it? And it's interesting you saying Lotte Kopecky not having the legs necessarily at Dwars Door Vlaanderen, and then still coming away with a win at Tour of Flanders, and then showing that she was giving absolutely everything at Paris-Roubaix and, you know, not succeeding. Because Denny, you were listening to the interview with Lorena Vibus after Paris-Roubaix that obviously we recorded before we heard that. And Lorena Vibus was kind of a little bit annoyed that Kopecky had been putting so much in there. And it did make us wonder, didn't it, about, you know, is it going to be another case of unhappy families at Estee Works, which I know something is Becca absolutely loves.
Yeah, I've always thought that Rebus and Kopecky have been a really good duo, and they work well together in different races. They've known where each other is the favourite, and Kopecky's either worked for Rebus or vice versa. Yesterday, I think, was that did felt different, and Rebus said she was annoyed with Kopecky. Kopecky was attacking when Rebus was leading into the sectors. And I think she'd said in the press conference that she'd had a word with Kopecky saying, please don't do that. So that, you know, that there is that kind of opening there of kind of more disharmony within the Estee Works camp. But I also wonder, you know, you think, well, are the team instructions clear enough?
Yeah.
You know, did they just find themselves in a situation which they didn't expect to find themselves in? Kopecky attacked so early yesterday, didn't she? And it almost like she was just felt like she had unlimited bullets to fire yesterday, and unlimited matches to burn, to use the cliches. And in the end, she just completely ran out, didn't she? And she was attacking at will, it almost felt, for a while. And to be out in front with 50, 60k to go with Rebus. I think they weren't quite sure how to play it. But yeah, maybe some signs of disharmony. But I think those two can manage things well. I think the distinction is clear enough. And as the season develops now, post classics, Pecky will be targeting the tour win. Rebus will be targeting tour stages. I think it will become a little bit clearer.
Well, I mean, at least it's fueled Rebecca's new Instagram obsession, which will be trying to find out if Lorena Vibus and Lotta Kopecky are having beef with each other, basically.
Well, actually, it is really interesting, jokes aside, just to see how much, I mean, it's obvious really, but how much more insight into reading the riders you can get on the ground, because I did suspect there might have been a bit of unhappiness in the SD Works camp after yesterday, but it was very hard just watching back on the TV screens to actually sort of get an essence of whether, yeah, they were just a bit disappointed, or whether they're actually quite pissed off at how each other had played it, or whether that dynamic was not ideal for them. And I couldn't really get enough of an insight on that. So yeah, I'm really interested to hear your take on that, Denny, from the press conference. And Weavers, I guess, wearing a heart on her sleeve and being quite candid there. And also interestingly that you pick up on the point that they can probably manage it quite well. I do think they're probably quite honest riders with each other and would be like, yeah, that wasn't cool, didn't like it, let's fix it for next time, more than this like bubbling. I mean, I'm completely just making all this up in my head now, but you know, when we look at potential for trouble in paradise, I think those two are probably frank enough to just have it out, and sounds like they were very honest after the race.
Chute, chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind me to tell you that this episode is also sponsored by Indeed. Now, if you are in charge of recruitment for your company, Indeed is all you need. If you've got a vacancy that you want to fill, of course you want to attract the best possible candidate for the job. That goes without saying, but you also want to avoid getting caught in a long drawn out protracted recruitment process. You want to fill the role relatively quickly, because all of the time that the job is vacant, you're placing additional strain on other members of the team, and you're spending your time on recruiting somebody when you could be focusing on your core business. So Indeed really comes into its own, especially with its sponsored jobs, which will help you stand out from the crowd, attract the right people, and hire somebody quickly. Sponsored jobs means that your post will jump to the top of the page and attract the eye of all the best and most relevant candidates, which means you can draw up a shortlist very quickly and interview the people you really think would fit with your organisation, and ultimately hire the best possible person as quickly as possible. Sponsored jobs makes a huge difference too, because according to Indeed's data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. It can be quite overwhelming recruiting somebody for any business, especially if you're a successful, popular company and you get inundated with applicants. You want to be able to sift through all of those applications efficiently, and Indeed will help you to do that. There are no monthly subscriptions with sponsored jobs. There's no long-term contracts. All you do is pay for the results that you get. How quick is it? Well, in the time I've been speaking to you, 23 people have been hired worldwide, according to Indeed's data. So there's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring process right now with Indeed. All of our listeners can get a £100 sponsored job credit to get your jobs even more visibility at indeed.com/cycle. So go to indeed.com/cycle right now, and by doing that, you'll also be supporting the Cycling Podcast. Indeed.com/cycle. Terms and conditions apply. If you're hiring, Indeed is all you need.
Now, we've spoken a lot about SD Works. We really must talk about something else, anything else.
Yeah, there were some other riders in the races.
They were. But yeah, I did want to kind of talk about this season, because it's felt to me that some races have been real thrillers, like Paris-Roubaix, like Milan-San Remo, and some races have been fallen really flat, which I, you know, would put Tour of Flanders and Omloop, both of those races, into that category. It has been like some of them have been played very defensively and some of them have been played really aggressively. And I wonder if that is a little bit a symptom of that you know, the transfer merry-go-round and kind of the spreading out of this talent across all of the teams, that maybe it means that there are certainly more teams that you're watching. So, you know, if a break goes and it's got anyone that's either from, you know, Fenix de Koenig or even AG Insurance or Canyon SRAM or Visma Lisa Bike, like, there's a UAE, a huge number of teams now that if one of their riders goes in the break, then you want to shut it down. And so in a way, we're kind of seeing that there have both been such great advantages to having the talent spread out across all the teams. And there have been a few teething problems, I guess, in trying to get the kind of right balance. But yeah, I mean, obviously these are all race. I mean, we talked about Omloop absolutely ages ago, didn't we? And how that was kind of a bit of a disappointment. But it's interesting how that hasn't... Paris-Roubaix, we've kind of seen, I think it's a bit of a, as it often is, kind of a pivotal moment in the season in terms of, you know, this is how we race and the teams are sort of settled now. You know, this is how we're going forward from this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we probably can learn a bit from yesterday about team dynamics, but I think it also is a very unpredictable race. I think we learned after we recorded the Arrive episode that SD Works had lost a couple of domestiques quite early on to mechanicals, or they're kind of falling behind the race, and SD Works were left exposed.
He's talking about SD Works again. Sorry, what do we do? How do we stop
it? I'm just about to come on to the other teams. But what we did see was, as you say, Rose, I think a lot of the other teams did have that strength and depth. Perhaps they might not have had a couple of years ago. And that enabled the race to become much less than a foregone conclusion once Capecchi and co went clear. So I think that we have seen that in other races. I guess Omloop was an anomaly, I guess, when teams are just trying to feed each other out. But I think we haven't got to the end of that yet, because we're going to have a new cast of characters coming in for the Ardennes and also then the Grand Tours and inverted commas. So I don't think we've seen the end of that. And I think what the win for Pauline Ferrand-Prévot showed yesterday was that I don't think anyone would have predicted that at the beginning of the race, not even Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, because she'd been ill and she was going to ride for Marianne Vos. But it shows that there are now so many more characters in the peloton that you can't underestimate. You can't afford to underestimate. And I don't want to go back to SD Works again, but I'm going to.
But you will.
But was Capecchi a bit too cocky yesterday? Did she think she needed to? Did she think she could break the rest of the peloton so early by attacking so early on the cobbles? I don't know. Maybe there's a hit. We love playing that theme of SD Works complacency, don't we? But it did feel maybe she's underestimated just the strength of the other teams, which we should talk about.
Yes, we should.
Well, I was really
Becca,
trying
can you
to
name any other teams at all, because that would be useful.
I was really trying to look closely at the group behind when Pauline Ferrand-Prévot made her move, because I really did have that question mark. Was it a complacency? Was it underestimating what she could do and thinking, yeah, let her go? Or was it just that race is so hard and so brutal and there were so many conditions at play that actually that was full gas behind and she just was stronger and she was just incredible and well timed and did a brilliant job and secured it? You know, it was a bit of a question mark for me as to whether they were lulling behind or whether it was just her strength. But Capecchi said in her post-race interview on the TV coverage that, you know, the fact that the other riders in that group were looking at each other or looking to her to actually do all the work, they were ultimately going to sacrifice trying to get on that podium themselves. And I think she was, you know, displaying that frustration as well. Like, come on, you can't always just look to me, because then it's going to be race over. So there was that frustration. But yeah, I wonder if Pauline Ferrand-Prévot was underestimated as a whole yesterday. And I think just everything you've said, the fact that she came into that saying she'd not been well, she hadn't had the ideal condition, she didn't even know she was going to race the last two races, and then she's taken second, and then she's taken that convincing victory so far out ahead. And also Grace saying in her interview that it was training just to test herself ahead of what she could do in a grand tour like the Tour de France. I mean, that's really, really exciting. Really, really exciting. And I loved as well the hug between her and Voss. I just want to say, talking about reading body language, that wasn't just a like, yeah, yeah, thanks, that was a good teamwork. I just feel I have to say it. That was like, for me, the sincerity of what that victory meant for her within that team and coming back to the road and having the support of Marianne Voss. So I think their team dynamic, as it would be if you're winning with that level of conviction, I think was really, really strong and really, really showed yesterday.
Yeah, one of my favourite moments yesterday was when we were in the middle of the velodrome and we could see Marianne Voss after she'd finished coming round, entering the grass area and riding around hunting for Pauline Ferrand-Prévot.
Yeah, yeah.
She's looking for her. She's desperate to congratulate her teammate. It was a really nice moment. And it showed she wasn't just, it wasn't just a cursory hug. It was like, I really want to, you know, celebrate this now.
They
you.
Meant that.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about, well, something else. I want to talk a little bit about a team that was very involved in Paris-Roubaix and kind of setting out how, you know, that race was played. And that was Little Trek, about, you know, how their season has gone. Because, there is a feeling so far this season that there's almost like, SD Works are the only team you could really place as winners. And in terms of losers, there seems to be just a huge, you know, all of the other teams, you know, would say that they had kind of were losers sort of overall, you know. I mean, you know, even like Visma Lisa Bike, who obviously, you know, took that win with Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, we've definitely said before this point that they could have probably done more with the firepower of Voss and Ferrand-Prévot to play with. But yeah, I wanted to kind of bring in a bit of talk about Little Trek, because they have, Denny, you raised it with me that they actually won the second most number of classics this season after SD Works, and it doesn't feel like that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, yeah, I looked at the list of one day wins this year so far, and they've won four, and I think SD Works won seven. They're the two biggest winners of one day races. That goes beyond the classics, of course, but yeah, it doesn't feel like that though, does it, when you look back at the season so far. Of course, Balsamo won Trofeo Binder again, which was a big win for her, and she won Shelder Price, not a World Tour race, but you know, the Sprinter's Classic, albeit Wiebes wasn't there. But yeah, I think we said this last year, but it does still feel like a bit of a team in transition, really, because they've lost Longo Borghini over the winter. And I think the hope was for them that they'd signed riders like Emma Norsgaard and Anna Henderson, Rhianna Marcus, of course, we haven't seen in action yet, but that's to an extent, but riders that have got a lot of potential, but haven't kind of perhaps been the world beaters that they're maybe capable of in future years. But so far, I think Lidl Trek haven't quite lived up to that aspiration yet. They did a really good job at Paris-Roubaix, and we talked about it in the Rive episode, didn't we, about the fact that they'd really used their team really well. They'd raced aggressively, they tried to make the race, perhaps didn't get the result that they deserved. But yeah, that does, again, they do feel like a team in transition, and probably looking back at the classics so far, they weren't really on the podium a lot beyond Balsamo. They are reliant on Balsamo at the moment for wins.
They are reliant on Elisa Balsamo, and I think also a little bit that, you know, Elisa Balsamo is obviously a fantastic rider, a former world champion even, and she obviously does mop up the wins, but I feel like the wins that she mops up are more in the absence of other people. Like, you know, if Lorena Wiebes was at Shelder Price, it would for sure, I mean, I think she's won that about six times. I mean, it would have for sure gone to her. So I feel a little bit like they are kind of all in for her, because I think that they lack having other champions on their squad. So the pressure is always on Balsamo to perform, and actually to perform in races where it's not really that likely that she's going to still be in the running at the end. You know, she isn't the quality of climber of Lorena Wiebes, and she isn't most of the time as good a sprinter as her either. So it's kind of, I think, almost like they need to go back to the drawing board with Balsamo and kind of look at what are the races that suit her needs, and perhaps bring in a bit of a stronger, some other options for wins, because I don't think what they're doing is working at the moment.
I think the reason that we're saying that it's been so disappointing is perhaps because we've seen them really throw the kitchen sink at the last two races, haven't we? Especially we've seen move after move. Every time you kind of, you know, have an eye on the coverage, there is a Lidl Trek rider doing something. We've seen Ellen van Dijk do huge moves and be a real driving force. And again, you mentioned Anna Henderson, and then yesterday Emma Norsgaard being out front for so long on her own and making that big move. I think they've made so many moves, they've been ever present at the front, they've really done a lot, but it's not paid off. And I think it's a really difficult one, isn't it, that we come back to you time and time again in these conversations, is would we be even more critical if they'd sat back and played it differently and not been aggressive? Because a lot of the moves that they've made, especially with the likes of Ellen van Dijk, have actually been pivotal in making other people respond and then have made the race, but not for Lidl Trek. It's not paid off for them, so they're probably in that difficult position now. What do they do, especially when, you know, Bausma isn't there? They have lost Longo Borghini, and I think we can't really shy away.
She can't be
saying,
replaced, can she? Either. I mean, you can't just replace Longo Borghini. There isn't a rider that replaces her, is there?
Exactly. And I think that's the thing. In this discussion, you can't omit the fact that there's a big gaping hole where Longo Borghini was. And she essentially, albeit with the huge team support around her and the dynamic that, yeah, clearly worked as team tactics, but she was able to ride away. She was able to be so strong that when she went, nobody actually could bring her back. And I think, yeah, I think they're massively missing that. And it's been interesting, as you say, to look at Elisa Balsamo and say, right, is today a day for her? If not, who is the chosen rider? And I feel like, yeah, they've made move after move and it's not necessarily paid off. But yeah, I have liked how aggressive they've been and what they've thrown at the race, isn't it? And it's made it exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they need to go back to the drawing board in terms of their tactics, because I think they played it really well yesterday at Paris-Roubaix, and they have played it well in other races, but they're trying to use what they have to their best. And you know, on another day, maybe Emma Norsgaard might have stayed away, or maybe it would have come back together and Balsamo could have got something in the sprint, but it just didn't quite work out. Whereas, you know, there are other teams out there that I would say maybe had more disappointing classics campaigns. I think we always expect so much Lidl Trek, a bit like SD Works, really. And perhaps because they haven't quite had the big wins, we've been a bit disappointed with them. But you know, other teams like Canyon-SRAM and Picnic and others really have had very, very slim pickings, you know, quite well-resourced teams that you would expect to feature in some of these races. Canyon-SRAM were active yesterday. Zoe Baxter put in a good ride, and Chloe Dygert for a while looked like she might be the big winner. You thought she might be, Rose. But, you know, beyond Nivea Doma's Flanders performance, in the end she came fourth. I haven't really seen them feature very much. Picnic, PostNL, well, I mean, where have they been in the classic season? There are lots of other teams, really, that I would pick out as losers before Lidl Trek.
But you're right, it is just the expectation that we have from previous seasons, ultimately, isn't it? Like, who do we think is going to be a front runner? And when you actually talk about the number of victories they've had, as you said earlier, Denny, like, it kind of puts it into context that we're being a little bit harsh. You know that I love Pfeiffer Georgie. Like, I always take my opportunity to talk about her. And I really felt for her yesterday, actually, at Paris-Roubaix, because so many people had, including myself, bigged her up, put a lot of pressure on her, given the results she had last year, given the ambitions that she's clearly got in the classics. But of course, you know, she just has had the worst luck. I really can't say enough how disappointed I am to see her go down again after everything that she's come back from. And you do have to remind yourself that she had a broken neck after last year's Tour de France Femme, and she's come back from that to the level she had. And actually, even after coming down, it's not like she was that far down the results as well. So I think, you know, I am going to come to the defence there of Picnic PostNL. Agree, they haven't had the results, but I don't think they've had the best luck either.
Yes. Well,
Denny.
No, I mean, I can't disagree. They have been a bit unlucky, but then they are reliant on that one rider.
Yeah,
it was only really
so.
Pfeiffer Georgie who was in the mix yesterday, and Charlotte Kuhl hasn't picked up a win. So, yeah, they're a team that's always been renowned for being very well drilled and very kind of tactically astute, but I think they, you know, and for bringing through talent, but for some reason that they haven't had the results that perhaps they need and would ordinarily have had.
Well, I mean, we talked about Fifa Georgie, about her at Paris-Bay. Shall we hear about our day at Paris? Enough of these riders. We're done talking about what they got up to in that race. Let's hear about what me and Denny got up to at the race with our mini feature, which was basically our day at Paris-Bay.
Well, Denny, here we are for another one of our paddock walks. We do them at the Tour de France Femmes du Jura. I say we do them, but I mean, I think we've done them twice. But, you know, whatever, it's a new tradition. And here we are, Paris-Bay Femmes. Denny, have you ever been to Paris-Bay Homme or Femme before?
This is my first time. I've ridden on the cobbles, but never been at the race itself. So this is all new to me. So I'm really excited to kind of soak it all in, see what it's like. And this is being just the fifth edition of the women's race as well. I think it's a new experience to so many people, riders, media and fans alike, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's so exciting, isn't it? Especially as we've had such different finishes. What do you think, what are we predicting for this edition today?
It is a really hard race to predict, isn't it? I think we'll see another small group come to the finale. The conditions here are very, very warm. It's predicted to be 25 degrees. Slight tailwind, so it should be quite a fast race. SD Works are the favourites, but Rose, you made a bold prediction, didn't you, in January, in the January episode, that a certain rider would win today.
Yes, I did. I said Chloe Dygert was going to win. First battle is that she is actually here. So that actually, that's a small win for me,
yeah,
that she has actually turned
ticked,
up. Because at the time of making that prediction, I wasn't even sure about that. Well, let's actually do some walking, Denny, because we've just been standing in the sunshine, just letting those Belgian beers from last night wear off a little bit, aren't we, to be honest? Oh, well, I mean, it is a fitting tribute, those beers, weren't they? Because Lotte Kopecky is, of course, the kind of number one favourite, I think it's fair to say, the defending champion. What about this? Visma Lease bike bus here. Let's get in over here. I think we can see their riders coming back from Sinon just over here. Imogen, can I get a really quick word with you? Is this your first Paris-Roubaix?
Yes, definitely my first Paris-Roubaix. But yeah, I'm super excited.
And what advice have the riders that have done Paris-Roubaix before given to you?
Yeah, that it's savage and that you've just got to accept that it's savage. And a lot of the girls spoke about how something will go wrong at some point and it's just how you cope with it. So yeah, I'm definitely going to try and go into it with a really calm and collected mindset.
Great. I'm sure you definitely got the legs for it anyway. So
thank you. Hope so.
Good luck, Imogen. That was a rider that you know quite well, Denny.
Yeah, excellent cyclocross rider. So she will be, you know, semi-comfortable off-road, and she's, you know, incredibly strong rider herself, so I'm sure she'll be a really vital team player for Marianne Vos and Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, of course.
And Denny, look who we've got over here. Paris-Roubaix champion, nonetheless, men's Paris-Roubaix champion, Maggie Backstead. How are you doing, Maggie?
I'm good. Paris-Roubaix weekend, you know, always happy when we got to this weekend of the year.
You're now at Cofidis. What is your number one bit of advice for riding those cobbles?
Ride as fast as you can, because that makes it easier. No, joking aside, I mean, there isn't really a specific way to ride these stones. You have to find your way of doing it, and I think that's the biggest thing, is like you can't say ride a big gear, ride a small gear, sit on the top, sit on the drops of the handlebars. There just isn't a specific way. You have to find what works for you and how you can make speed on cobblestones. So find your way. That's probably my best way of giving an advice.
How very nice and philosophical.
Very.
And not too specific, so no one can blame you if it's wrong.
No, exactly. I mean, but it is honestly, that's the truth. It's, and I made everyone in all of my girls here now try the different ways of, you know, going up and down the cassette and finding, like, either pedaling really, really high RPMs or really low RPMs and everything in between. And sooner or later, we kind of found what was optimum for each rider, and they find out that feeling of how that what that feels like.
Great, thanks, Maggie. We better carry on with our little walk, Denny. Let's go.
One, two, three.
Well, here we are, Denny. Rider's just gone off. We were standing right at the back of the line, and cool as you like, of course, you get world champions and teammates, Pauline Perron-Prevot and Marianne Vos. They look really chilled, didn't they?
They look very chilled. I mean, even speaking to Flora Perkins there, who's had a late call-up because Puk Peterson can't race today. So she's in, riding only for a second time. Didn't finish or was over the time limit the first time around, but she seemed really cool as well. It's kind of a very calm, measured scene, wasn't there, at the end?
That's not what it's going to be like on the cobbles. Well, here we are, Denny. A little brief bit of respite in our chaotic day hitting the cobbles, isn't it? We're waiting for the riders to come through. We're actually stationed on the first sector of pavé that they're going to get to.
Yeah, we're at Ornang Awondini, which is sector 17. And we're at the end, aren't we, at the moment, of the 3.7-kilometre sector. We know that the two riders have broken away.
And I've just spied here Beth Durea, today manager at Canyon Strand, but today you're obviously on wheel duty. tell us about that.
Yeah, Paris-Roubaix for Mavic Swift is a race where it's all hands on deck. A lot of the cobblestone classics at this time of year. If we have any additional staff that can go to sectors, then everything is helpful. Hopefully we're not needed. Oh, I'm not needed, let's say.
Beth, how handy are you with changing a wheel?
Hopefully we don't find out. and if so, please don't put it on video, on film. But actually, I've only ever had to do it once in a race. And it was the team, it was, I think, in 2018 when the team first swapped to having disc brakes. And it was when Pauline Farron-Prevot was on the team. And it was in Amstel Gold. And I distinctly remember. So here they are, the first break. We better get concentrated.
Yeah, here they come. The break, they've got a couple of minutes so far. They've obviously looked like they've come through that first sector pavé unscathed, haven't they? Oh, this is a real bit of a chicane here, Denny. We picked a good spot, I think.
Here they come, led by EF Education, Lidl Trek on the front. Still a very sizeable group together by the looks of it.
Lizzie Diner, no less, right on the front. Obviously the first Paris-Roubaix winner. We can see an RKR rider just over there.
Kopecky's just gone past midway in the pack. Still plenty of time to go yet.
It's so long, isn't it? The peloton is all so strung out already.
No, and you could just see when they were going past just how rattled they were getting on those cobbles, especially the riders towards the back where perhaps their momentum isn't quite.
Here we go, Flortje Mackay. Flortje Mackay going past on her own. Right, this is the bit where we have to hop step back to another bit of cobbles if you want to see any. You see all the dust picking up, kicking up, everyone getting covered already.
Well, Rob, I spotted an Isle of Man flag waving as the riders went past there. I thought we'd go and see who it was, and it's none other than Rob Holden. but you're Lizzie's dad. Tell us what brings you out here. Obviously, Lizzie, but I mean, how are you approaching today?
We're just trying to embrace it, to be honest with you, because it's a moment in time, isn't it? And you know, I reflect back, you know, when I rode at a much lower level than this, and you take it for granted, you know, so I don't want to take this for granted. I think that's probably a sign of age, though, isn't it, really?
And do you get to enjoy it being on the roadside? Are you nervous as well?
Well, funny enough, I just said to Rachel, we were watching the convoy come through and the first break come through, all of a sudden I thought, I feel a little bit nervous now. But I haven't felt nervous all day. I mean, Lizzie's 27 now. She's been around a little bit. She'll probably not thank me for saying that. But she has. She's been around pro cycling. She's done big races. But yeah, as parents, yeah, sure, you get nervous. I mean, you look at this and you go, I'm glad they're not doing this tomorrow in the rain.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest.
Well, Denny, in typical cycling podcast style, we're running so that we can see the riders, desperately trying to get to a pavé, but we're not going to make it, so, well, we get to see them pass. Asphalt's just as good most of the time, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we saw Ellen van Dijk just now attack out of the cobbled sector, so maybe we'll see more action as they lead the cobbles in a moment.
Ellen van Dijk's still there.
Van Dijk driving the brake. They don't have very much, so, I mean, it's not very far at all into the bunch, and the bunch is continuing to swell after shattering on sector 15.
We're seeing Lucinda Brand there coming off her bike, doing a bike swap.
And there's Georgie. Fire for Georgie's just gone past. She had a mechanical a while back. It looks like she's making her way back to the peloton, so there's still hope for her today.
Here comes the other group. Just, got to be like the third group on the road. Is that second group on the road?
Third. The third major group. Yeah, Imogen Wolf was in there taking a gel. Like, I bet that's a baptism of fire for her, but she's doing well. There's another group on the road now. It's just, they're all over the road, aren't they? I mean, this is the nature of Paris-Roubaix.
Right, we were in our own race ourselves, Denny. We're going to get back onto our running legs. And
I'm literally
running because we're got to make it to the velodrome and see them coming in.
Yeah.
Exciting. We don't know where it's going to go, do we?
We don't, no. It's still all special.
Well, Denny, we made it, as the listeners I'm sure can hear, to the velodrome, that epic, fantastic, magnificent finish to Paris-Roubaix. I mean, it was a bit of an epic, magnificent journey into the velodrome, wasn't it?
Oh, we nearly didn't make it, but we did a bit of a tour of the velodrome to get here, didn't we? And it's a real festival atmosphere here, isn't there? Loads of food trucks around. Lots of people having done the sportive, collecting their food, and not long now until the riders arrive into this famed velodrome, and we have Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, the home favourite, with a big lead, looking to be the French person to win Paris-Roubaix Femmes.
And here's his final sector of pavé. The crowd are on their feet. What a thrill! They're screaming in the stands, they're screaming, the velodrome goes all the way around, there are people on every single curve, every single little mound on this velodrome, and she's just about, we're seeing her turning, that kind of chicane into the velodrome, you can hear the heli up ahead, and we're preparing ourselves now to see our, you know, barring something catastrophic, really. A winner, a French winner, a comeback queen, a world champion. Whoa, you can hear the crowd now. And here she comes, a lone figure, bright yellow and black, for Visma Lisa bike, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot. And she's going to have it was almost a lap of honour.
Yeah, it's a bit of a lap of honour. This is like, I feel like I'm at a football stadium. This is a raucous atmosphere here. She got a massive cheer. I don't know if the crowd realised she's got another lap to do. But, what a sense of celebration here. She can just really just lap this up. What a return to road racing. I mean, she said she was targeting the Tour de France femme, but winning Paris-Roubaix must be
hand in the air.
Beyond her wildest dreams.
She's coming across the line, two hands in the air, soaking it up. Wow, what an immense effort.
It's spine tingling. Like, I've got goosebumps here. That is amazing. And we've now got the chasing group coming in. We've got an EF rider.
We've got Bake Borghese out, EF rider out in the front. She's not got she has enough, doesn't she?
Yeah, it's going to be touch and go. It'd be a good race for second place, but.
And for third only. Place, it looks like they're playing cat and mouse now for third place, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
They're all looking at each other now.
Capecchi's into the velodrome, way behind of course, but pushing on Lorena Rivas, who's now sprinting for third, but it looks like Borghese will take second place, and Kemp Vivas is trying to hold off Voss is trying to hold off Rivas. Going to be very, very close. Voss got it. What a day for
Visma. That was so close. And here is amazing. From our perspective, we're right in the middle of the velodrome here, and you know, to try and look, you can just get little glimpses of the riders racing through, don't you, between all the crowds, between all the people, just little flashes of colour. But we, you know, the listeners will know far more than we do, of course, having watched, if they watched it at home. But well, what? Well, let's go and see the reaction with all the soigneurs and the riders. Denny, you can see here Marianne Vos. She's looking around. She's obviously desperate to find out if she got that third place, that podium place. She's still on her bike. She's cycling around amongst the soigneurs, amongst all the press, basically trying to find the answer. We're also trying to find the answer of how to get in.
Yes. Well, Vos obviously can't find Perron-Prevot. Oh, Weber's did get third.
Well, Denny, we've just kind of walked around a little bit further from the finish line, and this is where all the riders, they're just flocked out on the grass in the middle of the velodrome.
Yeah, it's an amazing scene, just riders kind of completely exhausted on the ground. I've just been looking at the results, and I saw that Imogen Wolf, first year senior, just come out of the junior ranks. We interviewed her right at the beginning. She finished 24th. Really impressive result for her.
And for her team.
Rider. Yeah, for a team. Yeah, well, what a day for a team. Yeah, what a great atmosphere.
Yeah, and it's so, you know, to have that party atmosphere is such a contrast also to kind of these 1,000-yard stares that these riders have. Their faces are caked in dust and dirt. And obviously some of them, there weren't so many crashes today, but some of them nursing injuries, and you know, any former injury you've ever had is going to be rattled around for sure, isn't it? But it's just amazing seeing them all in this kind of reflective state. We don't see that at bike races. Like, this is so unusual. You know, normally they say, "Oh, where's the bus?" and they can't get out of here quick enough. We just stood quite near Martha Troy, and they're obviously a former pedlers to Charm.
Yes,
on the podcast.
I hope she's still got her mug.
Yeah, that she drinks champagne out of.
Yes.
Yeah. But let's see if we can get a quick word with her. Martha, how was it out there today?
Oh, it was a flat tire on the second sector. Yeah, that's quite frustrating. And then you come never again in the race. So it was a long, long day.
And why is it important to finish a race like Paris-Roubaix?
Yeah, I would never give up here if it's not necessary. And I would always keep going, and that's what I did today.
And what are you doing now? Are you going to go to the showers, the famous showers, or you think you can just head back to the bus?
I think go to the famous shower, having a nice dinner this evening, and let it sink in all, and it's necessary always after the bed.
Okay, thank you very much, Martha. Just spoken to Martha Troyan, and she's now burst into tears, it seems.
Yeah.
I hope it wasn't something I said.
No, I mean, looks like one of the riders has had an emotional day, but so many stories obviously happen completely under the radar.
Well, we've heard from plenty of riders that have had a hard and emotional day, haven't we? And we've just come along here to the podium where we're going to find riders who've had an emotional day in a very different way. We've got Lorena Vibas, has already been presented. Letitia Borghese, a huge ride from her, very canny ride. And here we go. Pyrotechnics. I mean, if you like unnecessary pyrotechnics, you will love this podium. But yeah, huge cheer for Pauline Ferrand-Prevot. What a moment for her, what a moment for this race, I would say.
Yeah, it really is a lovely scene, actually, with all her teammates sat in front of the podium, all the EF team as well out there, enjoying a second place as well. Some real joy after the real contrast to some of the stories we've just picked up on the other side of the grass.
SC Works, not there, but maybe they win too much. Maybe they're sick of winning. Third place isn't worth turning up.
I mean, let's face it, third isn't what they came for, is it? I mean, nothing less than a win is good enough for a team like SC Works. And although it's a fair result, I'm sure Rebus is pleased to be on the podium. I'm sure in the back of their minds, given the fact that they had two riders at the front of the race when it was just a group of four at one point, you'd have thought SD Works had it all there to win, but not their day.
Not their day, but certainly the day for Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, for Visma Lisa Bike, and for France. So let's finish off with the La Marseillaise, why not?
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Well, a very patriotic finish there, wasn't it, to Paris-Roubaix? And I should say that, you know, we could have known that it was going to be Pauline Ferrand-Prévot.
Or Marianne Vos.
Or Marianne Vos, actually, because my daughter, three-year-old daughter Tamsin, she got two high fives in the morning at the start of Paris-Roubaix, and that was Marianne Vos and Pauline Ferrand-Prévot. That's not a bad hit rate, isn't it? First and fourth. So almost third for Vos as well, was a pretty good moment. And she was delighted to be at the finish and to have got a bead on from one of the Canyon SRAM riders and promptly taken a swig of some horrible cherry isotonic drink. And everyone was like, no, stop. But she just went for it anyway.
Yeah, we even had Tadej Pogačar lining up at our door, didn't we, this morning?
Yes.
Looking for a high five.
I don't know if Tamsin, did she get to fully appreciate the butterfly that descended for Pauline's win? I can imagine Tamsin would have been all over that.
It's a butterfly. I don't even know what you're talking about,
watching
Becca.
In real life and I was watching on the telly box, is that Pauline from Prevost had a butterfly just descend and come into shot as she did her victory salute at the end. It was absolutely beautiful. So I feel like that needs to be, we need to coin the nickname now. What would it be? Papillon? Am I saying that right?
Papillon. Papillon. Pauline Papillon.
I mean, it suits her, doesn't it?
Does that sound
really
good?
It was really pretty.
I thought maybe Tamsin had thrown that into
the shot.
She is known for chucking insects at cyclists. Better than throwing like tacks on the road, I guess.
Much more pleasant.
Throwing a load of much more pleasant. If a little odd, but huge win for Pauline for Ron Prevost when we really weren't expecting it, because actually what's coming up next is probably where we would have expected her to be, you know, to be more suited to her, and that is the Ardennes Classics. You know, those are just on the horizon, starting at the end of this week. And what is more momentous is that we're going to have the return of this rivalry that we've just seen sort of almost little snippets of, little glimpses of so far. And that is Anna van der Breggen of SD Works versus Demi Vollering of FDJ. Now, Becca, I know that I don't want to make you sound like you're just really into gossip and drama, but you're really into this rivalry, aren't you?
Well, you can make it sound like that because it's absolutely true. I love just stirring the pot and creating the drama. And if you look at the history of this race, you've got those two riders that you just mentioned, Demi Vollering, who we know is coming back from altitude training, and Anna van der Breggen. They are the only two riders in history to have won all three Ardennes Classics in 1 year. So I feel that like further amps up the narrative around these two riders. As we've said many times before, of course, Anna van der Breggen was DS to Demi Vollering. They know each other very, very well. They're going up against each other again after we saw that brilliant rivalry play out in Strade Bianche. And yeah, I think we are set for an explosive Ardennes trio of races. I love the fact that we'll have the return of the old woman. Just makes me feel, you know, appreciated that we love the doyenne.
We love the doyenne, the old bird.
Love it.
Yeah.
I think it's really exciting that we'll have Vollering back for this trio of races. It looks like, looking at the provisional start list, that these two riders will contend all three of them and will go head to head. But there are other riders available too. But I actually don't, on that note, I wouldn't predict, because, you know, I want to get the crystal balls in here. I wouldn't predict, actually, that we will see the same rider take all three this year, because of everything we said at the top of this podcast, in the dynamic being so, yeah, vastly different this year.
Well, Becca is trying to snatch your crystal balls again there, Denny, with her prediction. How
I think
are
she's
you...
trying to steer well clear of them, actually.
That's true. How are you seeing it? I mean, we Becca's kind of trying to suggest that, you know, there are other riders, but I mean, you know, it's actually rare to get to an Ardennes Classic season that is so hotly anticipated, really. I think that quite often, actually, we kind of see the cobbled classics as they're the really exciting, or well, I do anyway, the exciting kind of gritty, you know, rider against rider races, and the Ardennes are sometimes a little bit of a damp squib and a bit kind of, oh, well, no one's doing anything till right at the end, so what's the point of watching it? Obviously, I can't say that from a cycling podcast point of view. But this is actually really hotly anticipated, these three races.
They are. I mean, I think that one of the problems with the Ardennes Classics is, of course, that the three main races, Amstel, Flèche Wallonne and Liège-Bastogne-Liège, come all within a week. So if you have a rider on absolute fire, they do then become the prime favourite to win all three. We've seen that on the men's and women's sides over recent years. But the big unknown is, will any riders arrive in absolute tip-top shape? Will there be multiple riders in that form? You've mentioned Anna Vennebregen and Demi Vollering, but then Pauline Ferrand-Prévot will be there. And we hope, we don't know what's going to happen with Elisa Longo Borghini. Of course, she had that horrible concussion at Flanders, probably likely still to be not racing. But there are so many different storylines to follow. And not just the fact that Demi Vollering will be there, but the fact that she's got a crack squad behind her, hasn't she? With Evita Musique and Juliette Labousse, who are both capable winners in themselves. I'm really looking forward to this three race season, classic season, because there are so many unknowns. And of course, I mean, Amstel Gold can be played in so many different ways as well, which is the first of the three, because last year it was Lorena Ebus who nearly and should have won that race, only to
celebrate too early.
And Mariana Voss snuck in there. So I think, you know, that will be another rider who we may, you know, another two riders there who we need to throw into the mix for that first race. It's, you know, the dynamic there is so much different to the latter two. And Fenix de Koenig, they're a team that has been quiet again this year so far, but if Puk Pieterse can come back from illness, if Paulina Royakkers can find the form that she had last classic season and in the Tour de France fam, then that's another team that should be in the mix as well. So yeah, it should be thoroughly unpredictable.
Yeah, because also Puk Pieterse kind of made no, you know, wasn't quiet about the fact that she wanted a major win. I mean, she's been consistently in the top 10, hasn't she? She actually hasn't been out of the top 10 all season, which is remarkable. But, you know, if you're gonna say that you want that major victory, then, you know, you have to have a few podiums in there. I mean, she got second in a really small Trofeo Oro race. She got fourth in Dwars door Vlaanderen, but, you know, where it really matters, which would be like Tour of Flanders, Milan San Remo, you know, ninth and tenth, that's not the kind of level that she's going to want to be hitting. She's going to certainly want more. And, we, you know, she won that Liège-Bastogne, the Ardennes Mega Mix stage from the Tour de France last year, which was kind of all based around Liège-Bastogne-Liège in its finale, wasn't it? So she's going to really, you know, want to perform there.
She will want more, yeah. I'm not... When I saw teammate Flora Perkins yesterday at Paris-Roubaix, she said that Puk had been ill and Flora had come in late to replace her. So I'm not sure, you know, what her form and fitness would be like. But yeah, she's a rider that I really enjoyed watching last year because she was so aggressive in a racing kind of way. As she, you know, she's always on the attack, perhaps still learning when to choose the right moments. But clearly then, as you said, at the Ardennes Mega Mix on the tour, she beat Demi Vollering and Cassie Nieuwiedoma in that fantastic stage. And she is capable of a big win. It's just a moment. I think it's a bit like Pauline Ferrand-Prévot. It's just kind of when she gets that, it feels like it's just a matter of time. But it feels like she's up against a lot of competition. When Cassie Nevi Doma, we didn't mention earlier, but she's another rider that will be in the mix. You'd have thought,
yeah, as a Flesh Wallon champion, Cassie Nevi Doma, of course. But I wonder if Puk Pietersen, maybe for her, the ride, you know, when she came onto the scene, she was so surprising and people didn't know how to handle her, and she was kind of going bending the rules all the time, wasn't she? I wonder if, in a way, because we kind of got used to seeing her and knowing how good she is, that actually that's working against her now.
Completely. Thanks for reading my mind and segueing me onto this topic, Rose. That's exactly where I wanted to go with this, because I think, you know, I was going to say on the psychological side, but of course with the caveat that, yeah, she's not been well, she's not had the best run of luck. So, yeah, that's obviously not a psychological effect. But I think she came in as this underdog and we were continually wowed by her. People in the peloton were surprised that she had the capability she did. We didn't know if she would extend her road season or whether she would go back off road, but then she was more and more present on the road because she, yeah, why wouldn't she when she was going so well? So she changed her calendar. So I think there was a lot of question marks around her, as you say, but now we know what she's capable of, and it would be so exciting to see her come into the Ardennes with really good form. And I think she could do a staggering ride, but we don't know, as you say, Denny, where she's at. But yeah, I think that definitely is an element that comes into play, because we've talked about this with riders having that pressure of maybe becoming a team leader or road captain, or going into a position where they're not this new underdog anymore. They're relied on by the team to put in big performances, to do more press, to have everything that goes with that, being a big name rider. And that's got to change the dynamic in your head, because, you know, when you've got all that pressure coming in and then you think, oh, I was ill for the last race, I wasn't where I wanted to be, or I crashed, that's got to, you know, you've got to contain that, I guess, as a rider on that level, to not let it spiral, to not let it dictate the rest of your season. So I think that's definitely come into play for Puk Pietersen, and I really hope she has a better run of luck and wellness to come into the next few races.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what she can do. The other person that I'm kind of interested to look at is Marta Cavalli. I mean, she is a former Flesh and Amstel champion. She won both of those in the same year. So she kind of, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, you would say, there. Not quite the triple crown, a double crown, I guess, then. But yeah, so she, you know, that was back in 2022. And then since then, she's had such terrible, terrible luck. I mean, she had a crash in the Tour de France Femme in 2022, which took her out for many, many months. You know, she returned and I think she only kind of got in 5 days of racing last season, because she's had subsequent crashes and injuries. She's obviously just joined Picnic PostNL from FDJ. They'll be obviously backing her as a potential, as someone to do quite well here. I mean, she, you know, she hasn't been on top form and she's kind of riding herself back into it, but I'll be really intrigued to see what she can do. And knowing also that at Picnic PostNL, like we were saying earlier, they really haven't done anything, and they have been, you know, so much, put all their attention so much on Fife for Georgie to try and get the results, that, you know, having Cavalli as well might be a good opportunity for them to get something. I mean, obviously they brought her on board exactly for that purpose, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's a really good shout. And she's obviously had such a torrid time, but clearly we know if she can refind the form she had in 2022, she will be a challenger. There's another rider a bit like that, well, not a bit like that, because she's not had the horrendous 2 or 3 years that Cavalli's had, but Liana Lippert is another rider where perhaps she will be approaching the Ardennes Classics a little bit under the radar. She had a brilliant race in Flanders, and she is the type of rider that could do so well in these races. She was actually second in Flesh Wallon a couple of years ago, and just feels like the archetypal rider for somewhere like the Amstel Gold Classic, where, you know, she can get over that the Kalberg. She's got a good finish. And Movistar seem to be coming into their own a little bit. So that, I think that's another, you know, another little storyline to watch there, to see how she can fare. She, you know, she's been under a lot of pressure to fill the shoes of Annemiek van Vleuten, really, as the leader of that team. And the Flanders performance kind of gave a hint that maybe she, you know, might be coming into her own in that respect, albeit, you know, no one could quite replicate Annemiek van Vleuten.
Yeah, I mean, GK really was phenomenal, wasn't she, in Tour of Flanders? Bit of a revelation, wasn't she? Well, I mean, listeners, you know, you're not going to get away from us for very long, actually, because, you know, we'll be back with an Arrivé from Flèche Wallonne and an Arrivé from Liège-Bastogne-Liège, where we'll be going into detail about those particular races. I'll be joined by one of each of you, but I can't remember which way round it is, to be honest, anymore. It keeps on swapping. But yeah, you'll be hearing from me and Denny and Becca in some kind of combination.
Keep it a surprise.
One of us will pop in.
I know, that's what I should do. I'll just put it on the WhatsApp group and then see who turns up. Yeah. Maybe that's the best way of doing it. But yes, so, you know, we'll be doing that very soon, going into detail about that. But I think you've both set it up perfectly and made me very excited for these Ardennes classics to come. So thank you very much, Becca, for joining us. Well, I'll let you go and, like a truffle pig, go and snuffle out some Prosecco somewhere, because you're probably feeling awfully jealous of us sitting in this lovely bar.
Definitely. I'm going to get some fresh bubbles and line up for the men's race, that other race that's happening.
Well, that is the only way that really people, that's what people think of when they think of Paris-Roubaix, don't they? They think of sitting back with a glass of Prosecco. I love that. We are rewriting the rules of how these things should be enjoyed, though, aren't we?
I love it. I love it. Thanks so much for having me. And yeah, I'm really excited for the Ardennes now.
And yes, Denny, we should get out trudging through the wet mud, shouldn't we, just find out
hopefully
what...
not too wet, but yes, Mons en Pavel awaits, doesn't it?
Yes, we'll find out what those blokes are up to, shall we? But yes, thank you both for joining me, and thank you, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.